Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors. We are Tribe.co.
Natural sports nutrition delivered direct to you. You can get a free trial pack of six delicious energy bars, trail mix, recovery bars and shakes for just £1 by using the code OXYGENADDICT1.
PrecisionHydration.com.
Leaders in triathlete sweat testing and hydration with multi-strength electrolytes that match how you sweat. You can get 15% off with the code OXYGENADDICT15.
At FueledByCake.com.
That'll be my charity cake recipe book featuring the likes of Vicky Holland, Emma Pooley, Chrissy Wellington, Laura Siddle and loads more. It's £10 and it's all for charity.
And also a big shout out thanks to our patrons who support the show with a donation. If you're interested in supporting the show, you can just click on the link that says patrons on our either in the show notes or on the Oxygen Addict website. And welcome to the show. Hello, Hells. How are you, Jet Set Superstar?
Jet set superstar. I have been jet setting, Rob. I've had a weekend away.
Not jealous at all. Tell us where you've been.
I went to Switzerland.
As you do for the weekend.
As
lifestyles
you do.
Of the rich and famous.
Oh, no. I have to. I knew that I was going to come in there. No, I in a previous life, Rob, I lived in Geneva. So I still have lots of friends in Geneva. So it's none of this, like, honestly, when I lived in Geneva, I think I was probably in a very small minority of people who managed to live cheaply in Switzerland.
I love it. You're crashing on someone's floor. I'm here imagining the kind of hotel that James Bond stays in, but I guess not, huh?
No. No, but what we did do this weekend, my friend who still lives in Switzerland had found a chalet in the mountains and we went and had a little weekend in a chalet in the mountains. It was great.
That's exactly what I was imagining you were doing, a mountain chalet. That's awesome.
It was very cool. It was really, really nice. But again, I'd say it was a functional chalet. It wasn't... wasn't five-star luxury chalet. It was nice. It was functional.
And it was in the Swiss Alps.
And it was in the Swiss Alps. And we had a day of downhill skiing. And I survived because I haven't been on a pair of downhill skis for probably about 5 years. It was really weird being back in that, like, the first run.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Oh, God. I was on a nursery slope because we had to go down the nursery slope to then get on a drag lift to go higher up. And I was just like, oh, my God, I can't remember how to do this. This is awful. Okay,
this will do me. Should we stay here today? We'll stay on the nursery slope, shall we? I like kids. We'll stay here.
Yeah. Seriously. I had a lot of fear. That sounds quite
Did you get over it and regain your – is it like riding a bike? Do you kind of regain your skiing confidence in no time?
I don't think it's quite no time. I did say to my friend, if I'm not snow ploughing by the end of the day and I'm back sort of parallel, I'll be happy. And I think I was back kind of parallel, like not pretty at all on about the third run down. So
hey, well, that's all right. If it only takes three goes to do it, that's brill.
It was okay. But towards the end of the day, I could really tell that you can just tell that you're not, like, you can tell you're tired, essentially. My legs were tired and they're not used to those movements. And I always have a bit of a problem with my left knee skiing and it never seems to want to engage to turn. And I think that was after a fall quite a number of years ago. So
right.
I kind of,
when kind that's of nursing hurting, that way.
I'm like, yeah, let's stop now. But no, it was great. It was sunny. It was clear blue skies. And it was, lovely. Really, really nice.
Oh, I'm glad you had a great weekend.
We had tartiflette made by a French person from the Alps. That was delicious.
Nice. Get it in, Fueled by Cake 3. Get it in there.
It was really, it was good. So there we go. That was my jet setting weekend.
Love
no
it.
Work either, Rob. That was
nice.
Oh, bit.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So you go to Switzerland, I go to Lancaster. That's the height of my extravagance this weekend.
Yeah.
So I was examining coach candidates for British Triathlon in that it actually, to be fair, it didn't rain all the time in Lancaster. We got away very lightly. Good fun though.
Oh, yeah, that's quite different, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Loads of budding, well, not budding anymore, loads of level two coaches all happily given certificates and sent on their way to go out and coach people. So it's nice. I like that. I really love the kind of the journey that they go on from being like afraid and I can't do it to actually you've transformed into this person who's a really confident coach sort of before your very eyes, you know?
Yeah. It's That's great. Really cool.
Yeah,
that
it
is
was
very
really
cool.
Lovely.
Oh, I did a bit of coaching last weekend, Rob, and I'm doing more this weekend. So, you know, just it's like a coaching sandwich with a trip to Switzerland in the middle.
Brilliant.
There we go.
And I've started seeing adverts pop up for your, or not adverts, but shares pop up for your Canute Duathlon on Facebook this week. So that's good. People are spreading the word.
People are spreading the word. Yes, it's going to be the first Canute Duathlon at the end of April, 29th of April. Very, very beginner friendly. Yeah. But entries are coming in nicely. So yeah, run, bike, run.
Hey, let's see if we can get the listeners to spread it. If we share it on Facebook, I'll share it on Facebook from my account. And see if other people can share it as well and see how far we can spread it around the world. You know, international entries helps.
Yeah, no pressure. I'd say it is going to be a really fun local race and very beginner friendly. So if you're on the lookout or you are trying to entice someone in your family to maybe give something a go for the first time, perhaps have done, you know, quite a few park runs or something like that, and they don't mind cycling, then it's perfect for them. So yeah, canuteduathlon.com.
And that's the 29th of April.
Yeah.
In Knutsford.
Yeah, in Knutsford.
Jolly good. Happy days.
Happy days.
Right, so first up on the show today, before we do results, we have got to announce the winner of the Tribe Triathlete of the Month Award for January 2018, don't we?
We absolutely do, Rob. And the winner is Jane Bowles from Chorley Athletic and Triathlon Club.
Love and it. Congratulations, Jane.
The nomination came in from Nick Geekass. Apologies if we've pronounced your name wrong, Nick. It could be Nick Kickass.
I like that. Let's call him that. Nick.
Okay.
Nick so, Kickass Geekass.
Yeah. So Nick says that basically Jane is a bit of a superstar, really, and she's been doing loads of volunteering. She's always participating at club and county events throughout the winter. She's been doing like loads of cross country, fell running, road running, duathlons, and that's on the back of a very busy 2017 in the water, on the saddle and in those running shoes. She is also, Rob, doing loads of coaching. She does the weekly club swimming sessions. Not only that, she's a mum of three. Nick says that she recently beat him on last month's duathlon. And then he says, I still can't quite believe that she celebrated her 50th birthday last year.
Love it.
So there we go. So congratulations to Jane Bowles from Chorley Athletic and Triathlon Club for January 2018's Tribe Triathlete of the Month.
And Jane wins a great big, it's 18 item, isn't it? An 18 item booster pack from Tribe containing loads of delicious energy bars and protein shakes and all kinds of good stuff, and a Tribe t-shirt as well. So if you want to nominate someone you know or even yourself for the award, you can do that by emailing helen@oxygenaddict.com. And remember, listeners, you can get a free trial pack of six delicious energy bars, trail mix, recovery bars and shakes for just £1 using the code OXYGENADDICT1 at wearetribe.co.
Awesome. There we go.
Exciting stuff.
I look forward to receiving more emails in February.
We want a photo, Jane. We want a photo of you with your big pack of goodies on Twitter, please. Send it over. Great stuff. Right, so let's jump in to results this week. Results are sponsored by our friends over at precisionhydration.com. And we all know the importance of staying hydrated and keeping your electrolytes up. But if you're a new listener to the show, you might not have been over to the Precision Hydration website. So get yourself over there, take their online sweat test. You can find out, you know, using a series of very clever questions, whether you're a heavy sweater or a light sweater, whether it seems like you're a salty sweater or not. And the really cool thing is, if it turns out you've been having problems, either with major problems with cramp, or especially long distance athletes who are feeling sick and weird and woozy at the end of long or hot races, the chances are there's something going on with your electrolyte levels. And long-time listeners will know that they sorted my problems out that were caused by being a bizarrely high concentration salt sweater. Now, they do a proper in-person sweat test where they do a, like a painless, put some equipment on you and it takes about 10 minutes and it checks how salty and how much volume you sweat. You don't have to do anything other than sit in a chair. And if you're a listener in the northwest of England, they're going to be having an evening where you can have this done on the 1st of February and it's going to be taking place in Chester. So more details on that are going to follow through. You can contact them directly by going through the Precision Hydration website to find out exactly the details of where it's going to take place. I've just realised the 1st of February is actually this Thursday, isn't it?
Time it
flies, yep. Doesn't it? Yeah.
I know. So
get on that. Get over to the Precision Hydration website and drop them a note if you want to know exactly where it is and what's going on. And in fact, I think we retweeted the details of it just earlier this week. So there's definitely stuff out there on Twitter for sure. So yeah, great stuff. Get over there and check out precisionhydration.com and support the people who support the show, please.
Awesome. So Rob, shall we start in South Africa?
Yeah. South Africa 70.3, and it sounds like it was an amazing race over on the women's side, doesn't it? For sure, in terms of in terms of Emma Pallant from Great Britain chasing down Jenny Seymour. And did you see the little video that was online of her? Maybe,
yeah,
what was she like 10 seconds behind? And you were like, she's got to get her, she's got. And then she kind of just faded towards the end, didn't get there, did she?
Yeah, that's right. So she got within 12 seconds.
12 seconds.
So I guess just perhaps, I don't know, perhaps paced that chase down just a tiny bit, went off a tiny, tiny bit too quickly, because Jenny Seymour at the end finished, what, a couple of minutes clear, I think, Rob?
Yeah, it sounds like she paced it to perfection, doesn't it? And used the first half to let Emma go really hard, and then went just as she was closing in, put the afterburners on, and then Emma faded, I think, towards the end by the sound of the things, looking at the splits. But a great effort from Emma for sure. And again, another, it's early season yet, but another really good indicator of her pathway towards Ironman this year.
Yeah, totally. And Rob, she did have the faster run split with 1:23:51, and Seymour's was 1:24:44. But yeah, what a great win for Jenny Seymour though as well. Home soil, and you know, Jodie Kanama had obviously won there for the past pretty much 7 years back to back.
Wow.
So obviously she's a new mum, so she wasn't going to be racing there this year. So there was always going to be a new female winner. So brilliant stuff there. Early season, isn't it, this one?
But it really is, yeah.
They're going to come thick and fast soon, Rob. So Jenny Seymour takes the win in 4:32 ahead of Emma Pallant in 4:34 and Judith Vaquero of Spain in 4:44. And then a little bit further back, Susie Cheetham, 4:48. And she said something like, it's giving me a bit of a kick up the backside.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Like you said, Hals, it's really early season yet, isn't it? It's
totally.
It's a very different proposition being in top shape now than it has been in top shape in October or September. So long way to go. And I think if you're finishing on the podium at this time of the year, things are looking good in the garden. Wouldn't surprise me at all to see Susie have a really strong season this year, actually.
Oh, I'm totally with you. Totally with you on that one. And then Rob, the men's winner, Matt Troutman, brilliant. He was won in 4:09 ahead of Belgium's Kenneth van den Dreyscher. And then Evert Scheltinger of Netherlands was third in 4:12. But the story there is obviously Matt Troutman. He had a really, really crappy last year.
He had a horrible bike crash, didn't he, if I remember rightly?
Yeah, about a year ago. Brilliant for him to actually come back again, because he had won it in 2015 and 2016. So fantastic stuff from him. He's clearly kind of getting very much back.
Yeah, back in the saddle. Right, other races going on. We had Israman and the Israman 70.3. Well, not an official 70.3, but I guess it's half Israman, they call it.
Yes.
I guess. Yep. So over in Israel. And it sounds like, again, I imagine Israel to be really, in fact, I've got a friend from Israel who's always telling me how beautiful it was this time of year and would always go over at February half term and come back, you know, oh, it's been great. It's been really warm. And the last couple of years, this race has been absolutely freezing. And again, this year was another year where they've had bizarrely windy, cold conditions on race day. So it looks like everyone's really been through the ringer. And it's notorious for being an incredibly tough, not only tough, but tough, windy, cold, and really desolate as well. Sort of riding off miles into the desert, coming round and not really seeing anybody else apart from the other competitors for the whole time you're out there.
I mean, we've looked at galleries before, Rob, haven't we? And it just looks the most stunning location.
Yeah. Well, the place to go to read up about this race is our old friend Howell Towell. He's got a great blog about it. He actually managed to finish in third place in the men's race after, God bless him, coming out of T1 and finding that his bike had a puncture in the front wheel, having changed a puncture in his back wheel at the end of his test ride on his bike the day before the race. So he ran out, didn't even get on his bike, flat front tire. So put some of that inflatable hoodad stuff into his front tire and off he went.
Yeah.
And he ended up in third place, but it sounds like he had a real run battle on his hands. Someone ran him down for 4 minutes, and with 5K to go, he kind of decided, you know what? I'm not losing this podium place. And dug in as hard as he's ever done and managed to hold this guy off when he'd run him down to within 10 seconds of catching him. So I encourage everyone, go over to Howell's blog. I think the address is, if you go to try-becoaching.co.uk and read his report. I love Howell. He's just a hardcore, hard athlete. And it's a great story of like overcoming the mental battle of, shall I just fold and finish fourth and let the guy catch me? It's just great. Love it. Really great story.
Awesome. So, Rob, in the Isman 113 event, Alice Hector won in 5:03, Tara Grosvenor of GB in 5:30, and then Irene Mazin of Israel in 5:53. And then, as you were saying, in the full iron distance one, Till Schramm of Germany took the win in 9:39, David Yilek second, and then Hal Davis third in 10:02.
Yeah. And in the ladies' race, it was Antonia Reznikov of Israel takes the win in 10:50, with Britain's Victoria Nealon in fourth. Well done, Victoria. I think it's worth pointing out as well that both Alice and Tara, I believe, are both coached by Howell. So nice little team trip over there early season.
I think Alice was, but I don't think she is anymore.
Right, okay.
I think, yeah. But she definitely has been previously.
Former athletes of the stable, as it were.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, good. Go. Was it Alice's third win as well?
Yeah. Yeah. 2014, wins. I think, 2016. And then 20... Oh, it's now 2018, isn't it?
Somehow it is, Rob. It doesn't feel like it is, does it? Because it's still January and you feel like it's still part of the winter transition somehow. But definitely we're a month in and we've got to recalibrate our internal calendars, health.
I'm not ready to do that quite yet, honestly.
Don't make the time go so quickly.
Oh, goodness. Well, you know what, Rob? February for me is just going to be pretty much a write-off. It's like full of work. And then suddenly I'll be out the other side and I'll be like, oh my God, we're nearly 3 months in already.
Anyway,
not thinking about it. Not thinking about it.
one day at a time, Hels.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the key. Yeah. One day at a time.
Okay.
Okay, so what have we got over at Coach's Couch this week?
We have a question from Chris Taylor, who says, what are the pros and cons of aero wheel sets? He says, 40, 60, 80, disc, how deep should I go for a long course race with hills?
All of them. Buy one of all of them. Right, so here's my kind of beginner's guide to aero wheels, I think, and we'll bounce these ideas around and give the pros and cons. But what I will say is we had a really interesting interview about a year and a half ago with the guys who started Flow Wheels. If you go back in our archives and check that out, they go over the various time savings and bits and bobs from different wheels. And essentially, and although all aero wheels are not the same, they're very much more similar these days than they were 4 or 5 years ago, I would say. Their testing has shown that their 60 mil wheel set is about the sweet spot. And although there's a significant difference from moving from your kind of traditional 100 pound alloy wheels that the bike came with to 60 mil deep section wheels, there isn't very much of a difference at all between the 60 mils and anything deeper in terms of gaining speed. We might be talking a handful of seconds over a 40k ride, but you're going to get much, or the bike is going to feel much more different underneath you if you've got much deeper wheels than 60 mil on. And so that's the thing to consider. So deeper wheels are faster, but they also come with this kind of this trade-off of the bike being a little bit more difficult to handle in crosswinds. And obviously the windier it gets, the more difficult it gets to control the bike. And in general, what I would say is for most age group men, the 60 mil wheel seems to be about the sweet spot. And for females who tend to be a little bit smaller or smaller guys, I would say maybe a 40 mil front with a 60 mil rear, that's going to be about the sweet spot for you. So it seems like if you're a smaller, lighter athlete, I won't say female, I'll say smaller and lighter, I think that's probably fairer, you'll get blown around more with a deeper front wheel. So it's definitely worth getting out on it and practicing on the wheels, because you're going to have like this skill element of, you know, learning to ride on those wheels. But that's going to happen no matter what sort of depth of wheels you've got. At the very, very pointy end of the field, if you are an athlete who's trying to qualify for Kona, there is going to be something to be said for the idea of, you know, a 60 mil and a disc, or an 80 mil and a disc, or even putting a deeper rear wheel on the back. There is going to give you a very small margin of improvement, and you're always going to see time trialists riding with a disc wheel. There's this argument that if you're on a very hilly course, then a disc is going to hold you back a little bit because it's a bit heavier. But from all the data that I've seen, again, you're talking something like a second or two on a big hill for the extra weight of a disc. So it's almost negligible, and it largely comes down to your confidence in terms of handling the bike with those deeper section wheels on. So one thing I would say to you is, a good consideration when getting these things is, if you've got 60 mil wheels, you can kind of put them on your bike when the weather gets a bit nicer, and you can ride them in preparation pretty much all the time. Just change your tires for race day. It tends to be, if you've got a disc wheel and a really deep front, there's a bit more of a barrier there to kind of going out training on it. And the very fast guys will do that with no problem with it at all. But I think for most people, they feel a little bit, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Hell, self-conscious.
Twitchy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to feel self-conscious taking a disc and a deep section wheel out for a ride. And you certainly, you know, you could take your 60 mils out on a club ride with your friends. You wouldn't want to turn up with an 80 mil and a disc on your bike, because it's potentially a handling nightmare and people are going to laugh at you, quite frankly. So that's my advice with that. I think 60 mils are the way to go. If you're a little bit lighter or smaller, maybe consider getting a 40 mil front to go with a 60 mil rear, and you should be about there or thereabouts in the garden. The combo that you raced with, were you on a 40 and a 60 at Wales?
40 and a 40.
A 40 both. And a 40, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously Wales, hilly, and oh my goodness, it was windy that day, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I would not have wanted anymore.
I think the other thing to bear in mind as well is, if it's really windy, you're going to get blown around a lot no matter what wheel set you've got on. Yeah. But there's a difference between getting blown around a bit and feeling, I think I've told my story before on the podcast, I bought a pair of, you know, those head three wheels.
Yes.
That are like the tri-spokes. And I took them out on a really windy day to do a race, and I was getting blown into the second carriageway of the dual carriageway. It was, you know, I'd been out for a little test ride and everything was fine, but in a windy day, I just didn't have the skills to control them. And so I ended up sitting up on the bullhorns trying to just not get blown into the traffic, thinking, I've spent all this money and I'm definitely slower because I'm just sitting up and I can't even be in the aero position. So it's that trade-off of, you know, wind against handling and all that.
Totally. And I do think that practicing with it and getting used to it is really, really important.
Yeah. I think that's the number one thing with any piece of equipment, is you've got to accept, if you're just going to roll out on race day with a new piece of equipment, it is going to feel strange underneath you. And especially in the case of wheels, you need to be riding them a lot in the run-up to your big race. And they're not going to get hurt, but you want to change your tyres to a nice new pair of race tyres the week before race day. That would be my advice to you.
Yep, agree with that one.
Yeah, good stuff. And just a shout out for the end, Team Oxygen Addict, you can get a 2-week sample training plan for £1 if you send us an email to help@oxygenaddict.com. We'll send you the details and the link, or there's loads of bits and bobs floating around on Facebook at the moment. So if you're considering having structured training for this year, and I know a lot of people are at that point in January where they're going, this is starting to feel very real. I have a race in 6 months' time and I don't know what I'm doing. Well, if that's the case, we can help you out. Drop us a line. We can help with everything from a simple training plan all the way through to full on one-to-one coaching to suit whatever it is you, whatever you need, basically. So yeah, give us a shout if we can help.
Awesome. 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 So Rob, we move on to this week's interview of the week.
Yeah, great interview. And since I tweeted that we were having him back on, there's been loads of positive comments here. Kevin Collington was on about a year ago. He's had a great 2017. He won Ironman Taiwan, where it was just insanely hot. And he won a whole bunch of 70.3s as well last year. So he's back and recovered after a horrible bike crash at Challenge Iceland. So we've had a good old catch up about his year and find out about his aspirations. Now he's proved he can race in the heat. Aspirations to race in Kona. So here we go with this week's interview of the week with Kevin Collington. Kevin Collington, welcome back to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. It's great to have you back on. I was looking back and it's almost exactly a year since we had you on the show last time. So having read through your blog, it's been quite the year for you. So we've mentioned your results as we've gone along because I think you're a good guy. You really helped us out last year. And I remember you sent a whole... For people who don't know the story, you sent some stuff over for our charity draw that we did last year, and a lot of people promised stuff, and a lot of people sent stuff, and some people didn't. And then this massive box arrived from you over in Boulder, and I was like, I'd actually run up to the post office to collect it because I'd missed the delivery.
Oh, okay.
I got to the post office and I was like, holy crap, how am I going to carry this back down from the bike? It's like a 2 mile run. So first off, thank you very much for your generosity in sending all that kit through, man. It was backpacks and a load of stuff from Hocker 1-1. So we really appreciate that. Thank you very much. And it's been great following your really successful year with a bit of a blip in the middle and kind of talking about your results through the year. So first up, give us an overview of how the season's gone. Are you happy with how things went overall?
Yeah, and again, thanks for having me on. It's always great to be on the
pleasure,
show.
Yeah,
I couldn't have been really any happier with how last season went. I mean, like you said, there was a little blip in the middle of the year, but just being able to come back from that and still have a good second half and late season it kind of tied it all together. So, it was a crash, and I'm sure we'll get into it in Iceland, but. But yeah, it was that could have easily ended the whole season. But I have some good support here in Boulder, and we were able to bring me back around. So yeah, it was a great season.
So glad to see that you came back from that, because it could have been. I mean, there's been a few horrendous crashes recently, and so it's always. We were talking just in the last episode that we just recorded about how Tim Don's posted an update of his recovery from his bike crash in Kona. And the temptation is you kind of read, oh, an athlete's crashed, you know, that's bad luck. And then you get on with the next results, who won and who finished where. And of course, the impact on you, on the athlete who's had the crash, can be absolutely horrendous, can't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, Tim is just like, I mean, we're all so happy that he isn't any worse than he was. Like,
yeah.
And I mean, for me, I'm a big fan of Tim, and I hope he comes back and makes another run at Kona. Because, I mean, I had him picked for podium last year. I was gutted to see, obviously, that was a horrible crash. And I mean, the construction all around the Queen K last year was, I wasn't even racing and I was out riding there and I was like, I don't really want to be here. Like, so it was kind of a dangerous situation, but like, we're all just happy Tim is going to make a full recovery. But
yeah,
everybody kind of gets on with it, and it's up to you to get better and bring yourself back. My crash was nothing compared to Tim or Matt Russell.
Well, yeah, that's another horrendous story. Hey, yeah. So listen, let's tell the story arc like this. We had a great start to the season. We had this horrendous crash in the middle of the season, and then we had a great end to the season. So the overview was, you had a win amongst other great results. You had a win at the 70.3 Pan American Championships in Monterrey. Then you had a win in 70.3 Costa Rica. You went out to Challenge Iceland, which you'd won 2 years in a row, and unfortunately you had your crash there. Bit of time rebuilding yourself, which unfortunately for you, I think the 70.3 World Championships fell in that kind of recovery time. But you still had a decent race here. You're still top 20 at Chattanooga. And then came the big result of the season with the win at Ironman Taiwan in ridiculous heat. And then another win at 70.3 Cartagena at the end of the season. So great sort of overview of the season if we take that kind of blip out of the middle.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, like, the 70.3 Worlds, it's probably my biggest regret out of the whole season, because I was just 90 seconds off of the main swim group. I was able to, I think 3 days before the race, I had my first completely pain-free swim with because I had injured my left shoulder.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, you know, like maybe my 28 years of swim experience will help me out tomorrow, just trying to be positive, but it didn't. I was off the back kind of by myself. And that was just the race. And it was interesting, I guess, from a racing perspective to be in that position, because I'm not normally by myself away from the front swim group. It's just not a position I'm used to being in. So like the tactics involved were completely different for me. I hope I never have to be there again, but at least I know what to do. And I salvaged a second group bike kind of and decent run. I was up in 11th at one point, but then I just blew up. Finished in 16th, so but yeah, that was my biggest regret.
Well, do you know, this would be an interesting one to unpack a little bit, because I think sometimes we learn more from the stuff that doesn't go well for athletes than we do, you know, if they have this great season where they win everything. I think sometimes it's hard for age groupers to relate to that, but talk us through a little bit then, as a guy who's been a front pack swimmer his entire career, what was going through your head when you found yourself, you know, you find yourself off the pace in the swim? What was the mental talk that went on, and how did you kind of deal with that?
Well, I mean, it was definitely like a sad moment when I saw the group start swimming away and there's nothing you can do. And that's not something I'm used to. Like, usually I'm just solidly in the pack, like the main group. I wouldn't have been out with Ben and Gomez, Ben Canute, but like I would have been in that main pack. And so that was kind of, I was like, oh, there goes like the race, really. But I did come out of the water with a couple guys. I was with Drew Scott, who's a training partner of mine, and then Jackson Laundrie, a young Canadian. And like we were able to basically work really hard for about 20 miles and kind of bridge up on that climb. It was the Lookout Mountain climb. Bridge up to like a decent, like people I knew. I was like, okay, we're sitting here with Andy Dreitz, and I think we came up on Tim Reed. We had Tyler Butterfield. So I was like, oh, I'm kind of here.
Yeah.
I'm kind of in the race. But there was still 9 guys up the road. And for a race that pays 10 deep, that's kind of not a good position to be in, you know. We were all racing basically for 10th. And, you know, 12, 15 guys in a group, and there's one money spot, sort of one big point spot. That's not a lot to go around.
And that's tough from a professional's point of view, isn't it? Because usually fields are just not that deep, and you guys are going to be racing for a decent paycheck in first, second, third, wherever. To all be racing for the paycheck for 10th place and the last kind of significant points, I suppose, does it go through your mind, you know, do I save my powder for another race kind of thing?
Yeah, so I mean, if the race had been, let's say it was this year and it was in Port Elizabeth, like I totally wouldn't have gone. But since it was just like it was in Chattanooga, that was a nonstop flight for me, 2-hour flight. I was like, I'll still go. And then I actually have a history of doing, so I was racing Taiwan 3 weeks after Chattanooga Worlds. And I was like, this is just going to be the last big session before Taiwan. And so I knew I was going to finish the race, whether I was in 50th or I was in 5th, you know, and I was just running there in 11th, 12th, 13th. And I mean, the course was so hard. It was a lot of just like pounding on your legs. It was up and down. And I feel like that's really good for Ironman running, because it's I don't usually run 21 Ks at race pace off the bike on concrete down these screaming downhills. So I feel like it was actually a great session leading into Taiwan.
Everybody that I know and that I coach who raced Chattanooga was more sore after that race.
Yeah.
Every single comment was like, oh my God, coach, my legs hurt so much. I had one guy who sent me a photo from the race hotel of like people shuffling on their bum down the stairs the day after the race.
It was.
So, in terms of, obviously, you're going to take a week to get over the soreness, but it builds tremendous leg strength in terms of an athlete like you who's racing an Ironman. And I don't think perhaps for your average age group, it's the best policy, but for someone who's in really good shape like you, it's probably a really good last solid workout before the race, right?
Yeah, like it did kind of whip me into shape a little bit. Like I hadn't done a lot of long training for Taiwan. It was mainly just focusing on 70.3 worlds and just 70.3 racing in general. And like that was the longest session that I had done, pretty much like a 21K run off the bike was one of my longest runs. And yeah, like my biggest thing, like 30 to 40K in an Ironman, that's when your legs just start getting like sore and like just all the pounding on your legs starts to just add up. And I think that did help. The delayed onset muscle soreness from Chattanooga was a good prep for the Ironman run.
It takes a certain kind of mindset, doesn't it, to put yourself through a course like 70.3 Chattanooga as preparation for something else.
Yeah.
We're not right. Oh, man.
No, it can't be right.
Yeah, well, listen, let's go back in the season a little bit at this point. And the first standout result you had was, as we said, the Pan American Champs in Monterrey, which is a really interesting race, actually, because from our point of view, Helen raced Monterrey. Helen lived out there for a while. So when Monterrey came around, she raced it, I think, 2 years ago and sent these photos over. So the swim's unique, isn't it? And that you swim almost down a, I'm going to say canal, but that makes it sound like something disgusting. It's like beautiful blue water, but only maybe, 2 meters wide?
Yeah, it's 2.5 meters wide. I think it's maybe 2,500 meters in length total. But it's like it's a massive swimming pool. And it's maybe, 3 feet deep. And so it's a little bit of a gentleman's agreement. Like, they're just like, hey, you can't walk. It's a swim.
I'd be dolphin diving the whole way.
Yeah, like I think it's just a little too deep to dolphin dive unless you're 7 feet tall. everybody does swim. Obviously, they have officials walking along the side of the river / pool.
Yeah.
And if anybody starts walking, obviously it's a DQ. But it's a unique course and actually a beautiful part of Mexico. So that's the third time I've raced there. The first time that it hasn't been just raining, which was nice. I finally got a sunny day in Monterey.
Well, that's what Helen said at the time. The year she was out, it was raining and it was treacherous on a stretch of cobblestones and people were spinning around and going down. So she had a great day for it. And obviously you must have been totally stoked to take the win in a Pan American Champs, big points race.
Yeah. So we were talking earlier about dropping out of a race to save yourself for the next one. And that's actually what I did. I was racing St. George, the North American Championship, the week before, and things just weren't going well. And I pulled the plug on that one just so I could be ready for Monterey. And it's a little bit of a gamble, but it totally paid off in that instance. And yeah, it was just a perfect day. Like I swam with the front group and then a couple of us got away. It was Tyler Butterfield and Sylvain Soudry from France. And then I just had the fastest run of the day. And I was super surprised to win. Like going into the race, I was saying, maybe I won't race 70.3 worlds this year. I might not have enough points to race. Maybe I'll just do something else. And then I auto qualified. So it was like a complete change in mindset in one race, which was just a great way to start the season.
And it's cool that they have these auto qualifying spots because it really, it can shake things up for any number of athletes, can't it? If they win the race unexpectedly or even expectedly, there you go. Your whole season, you're straight into the world champs and that kind of takes the direction that you go, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it's great to have like a title, Pan American Championships. That was awesome. Auto qualifier. I didn't have to worry about points anymore. And I mean, it takes a lot of stress off for the season. I was really keen to qualify for 70.3 Worlds. I wanted to just because it was back in the United States. But that was a great way to do it.
Now, you mentioned that you raced St. George the week before that, which was the American Championships. And obviously racing back-to-back weekends at 70.3 is a big ask, isn't it, for anybody?
It
was that something that you'd planned as a almost like a training strategy for later in the season, or was it something where you thought, well, if St. George goes well, maybe you wouldn't race Monterey, or had you always planned to do the two weekends back to back?
I think I was going to go to Monterey no matter what. It was just St. George was the focus race. I mean, that is the North American Championship. I've done really well on that course, and I was pretty devastated to not do well. I just had a bad day. Yeah. And so did my training partner, Sam Appleton, and a couple of the age groupers that Matt Dixon coaches on Everyman Jack. I mean, across the board, people just didn't have a great day. And Matt was like, I think I might have messed up your taper a little bit. And Sam came back the next week. He won Santa Rosa 70.3. I came back the next week and won Monterey. So it does look like it might have just been a little blip in the taper that he planned. Or maybe we just trained too hard leading into it. It's hard to tell really at the beginning of the year where you're gonna be on race day. But yeah, the two 70.3s in a row, the second one always has to be just kind of for fun, or like maybe not as big of a focus, like a C race, because I mean, for me, it's really hard to race two in a row.
Yeah, 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 sure. And let me ask you this. How sore do you tend to get after racing at like a big 70.3, a race gone flat out? How sore do your legs get? And how long did the sort of delayed onset muscle soreness, how long does that last for you?
Like, it's kind of course dependent. Like St. George, it has the last 3 miles just kind of a negative 2% downhill. And if you are in a run battle with someone, it could be a week and a half, you know, before I'm right again. And I was kind of hoping for a situation where maybe I shut it down and just kind of jog it in a little bit. And like a little story from earlier in the season, I did Ironman's or 70.3 Subic Bay, and I was going to do Taiwan the following weekend, 70.3 Taiwan. And I got to like 7 miles of the run, and I was 4 minutes ahead of sixth place and 4 minutes behind fourth. So I was like, okay, I'm going to jog it in. And then next thing I know, I see Sven Rieder on the side of the road, just barfing, just having the worst day. And he sees me come by and he starts running with me. And I was like, Sven, are you serious right now? Are we going to do this? Like, we're battling for fifth place.
Oh, no.
And, so I guess he just got all the ickiness out of him there. And then he was just ready for a straight up run battle. And we ended up getting a sprint finish for fifth place, which was just the worst idea. of course, since he's like an Olympic medalist, he beat me. And then I came back the next week to Taiwan and had maybe the worst race of the season. So definitely have to keep your mind or your head on your shoulders in that when you're racing two in a row, you have to really be strategic. And I definitely made a mistake in Subic Bay.
And I remember from reading your blog, there was a race later on in the season where you were in a run battle for third?
This year. Oh, yeah. That was Cabo 70.3. That was Cabo. With Tim O'Donnell.
That's right. And, yeah. And someone had taken a photo and your caption underneath says, like, nobody thinks this is a good idea or whatever. You know, nobody wants to be these two guys right now.
Yeah, I think nobody was jealous of us. Like, and it was me and Tim O'Donnell, and he, I've never been so evenly matched in a run for so long. I guess I had some pretty, maybe I'm trying to block out last season. I had some pretty rough runs, like some pretty tough battles. So, yeah, that was definitely one of the hardest ones.
This is a bit like childbirth, isn't it? Your mind is just like completely denying these horrendously painful things that's happened, and you're like, yeah, it's kind of fun racing these guys. Oh yeah, I'd forgotten how much that hurts actually.
yeah.
So off the back of Monterey then, about a month later you went to Costa Rica. You took out the win there as well.
Yeah. That was a beautiful race. I mean, that was kind of like a race I threw on the schedule. It was easy to get to. I've always wanted to go to Costa Rica, and it was the end of my first half of the season. And I was going to go visit my brother who lives in Mexico after that. So it was kind of a way to get down south of the border. But then, yeah, it was a beautiful race, absolutely amazing venue. And I think I want to go back this year and do it again and defend the title.
Nice. And is that you mentioned there that sort of the end of the first half of your season. Is that the way that you and Matt Dixon plan your season out? Do you kind of have a first chunk and then a bit of a break and then a second chunk?
Yeah, we try to break it down into two halves. And last year was weird because we did have the first season break. And then I did have my accident in Iceland, which caused like another season break. And then after Taiwan, I kind of had a third season break. So I don't know. We just kind of throw them in whenever they seem like necessary, or whenever I'm kind of really beaten down by a race. So, but usually it just one is planned, and that's just to ramp up, like kind of lose a little bit of fitness so we can ramp back in for the second half of the season and really have a good go at what will be this year Kona, but last year was Chattanooga.
It's interesting that you start with, and I think this is something age group is going to take away from this. Even a top level pro like you starts with planning in one mid-season break. And if anything, you put in more breaks rather than less. It's not like, hey, you know what? I feel great. I'm going to keep on driving through. It's like the body's going to respond to that rest and recovery if we have more breaks in there as well. So that's something for people to bear in mind. I think that your sort of on the fly thinking is almost like, I'm going to take this opportunity for more rest and recovery rather than I'm going to keep on driving through because I'm in good form.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's easy to get, like, I've seen my form just drop and drop throughout the season because I refused to take a break. That was more back when I did ITU. And, you know, I'd be racing great in April, May, and June. And then by the World Champs, I would be like 59th place just off the back. And I'm sure other people were ramping into their season, but I was also losing fitness just because I refused to back it off a little bit. So, and then when something like Ironman Taiwan happens, where it's just the most ridiculous thing you've ever done and your body hates you, I guess you just have to take a break, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, I've read the report about Taiwan, so I know exactly what's coming with that one. But before we get to it, let's talk about Challenge Iceland, because, well, as we said, you know, race you've won twice before, incredible, stunning country. If people haven't been there, it's just an amazing place to go visit, let alone race there. I imagine the water somewhere between freezing and totally freezing, right, to swim in.
Yeah.
It's not like you're going to get lucky with one of those hot thermal springs and get to swim in the water like that.
No.
So you've got this, it's almost like the scenery. When we were driving through there, we had a holiday there a couple of years ago, and my wife commented it was a bit like a Minecraft landscape that hasn't been built on yet, that it's just blank for miles, and then all of a sudden there'll be three or four houses, and then it'll be blank for miles again. So I'd imagine the sort of the natural energy of a place like that to race in is amazing if you're the kind of person who, like you, seems to love the outdoors and natural beauty.
Yeah, I mean, they filmed so many things there. I think they filmed a little bit of Game of Thrones in Iceland, and also the movie Interstellar. So it's otherworldly. And those pictures from Challenge Iceland there's no filters. That's exactly what it looks like. It looks like another planet. It was a beautiful place to race, and the people are amazing. Wonderful country. But this year, actually, I was really excited about this last year's race, 2017, because the whole week it said it was going to be great weather on Sunday. It was like, oh, it's going to be like low winds. It's going to be sunny and warm-ish. but then we sort of wake up on Sunday morning and just we hear the winds howling. And we start driving out to the race, which is about 30 minutes outside of Reykjavik. And it's, like you said, the lake that it's in, they had to choose that one because it's one of the most shallow lakes in Iceland that's accessible. And that just means the water kind of heats up quicker. Some of the really deep lakes barely get above freezing.
Yeah.
So
I was going to say that we should like sort of point out that when we say it heats up in Iceland, how cold was the water?
So on race morning, I think it was in the low 50s Fahrenheit, like 52, 54. And wow. I mean, it's not,
so that's
it's
like
kind of like
degrees centigrade, isn't it? Something like that.
It's like a very cold escape from Alcatraz swim. So it has been done before, but it's not pleasant at all.
Yeah.
And the wind was blowing, and it got up to 40, 50 miles an hour with unfortunately some gusts of wind. And I'm a little guy, so my roommate, Justin Metzler, he was also racing, and he is 6'4", 175 pounds, and I'm 5'11", and I weigh 140. So
it's not your ideal day for racing, man.
Yeah, and I had only brought my disc wheel and my 75, like my deep dish front wheel. Oh. And so Justin and I, we were actually running identical bike setups. He was on a different bike, but the same wheel setups. And we're riding out there. We're like, I guess we're second and third on the road. And I just get hit with this gust of wind that just blows me. It basically picks me up and throws me off of the road. I've never felt anything like it. It was
really,
it was very scary. Yeah.
And so you were riding along in the aero position. The next thing you know, you and the bike are in midair.
Well, I was descending this like kind of small hill, and I had already gotten out of the aero position. So I'm out on the hoods because I was already a little freaked out by the wind. Okay. And then the next thing I know, this huge gust of wind just picks up my rear wheel, which is it was a disc. So it's basically a sail.
Yeah.
And I just got pushed. At first I was in the air, then I was pushed, and I'm like riding along the side of the road in the shoulder. And I mean, Iceland is a volcanic island, so most of the shoulder is rocks. But I would say I got very, very lucky. I landed in a patch of grass wow. right on my shoulder. So I had a couple torn muscles in my left shoulder that they were just partially torn. But I honestly could have completely broken myself if I had landed on a rock. So I'm kind of thankful that that's all that happened. Justin, meanwhile, just rides by like nothing happened and keeps going. So
thanks, Rumi.
That's the joys of like having an extra 40 pounds on him. So he ended up winning the race, so kudos to him.
Oh, nice, man. So what was the damage afterwards then? Obviously it's put a hole in your season here, and it's significantly impacted your ability to swim for a good while after Iceland, right?
Yeah, so I mean, immediately afterwards I was picked up by a very nice Icelandic couple whose names I couldn't pronounce, and they drove me back to the race site. And then they kind of put me back together a little bit. I had a sling. I couldn't really lift anything with my left shoulder. And I was out of the water. I was able to start sculling maybe 2 weeks later, like just little 25 scull in the water.
Okay.
And then by 4 weeks later, I was able to do like very slow, out of shape freestyle. And so that was like August 23rd, 24th. And then I think Worlds was 2 weeks later. So that wasn't the best lead up to Worlds. I got 2 weeks of decent swim training in, like kind of building back into it, still a little bit of pain. And then, yeah, like I said, the first pain-free swim was in Chattanooga. And then I was, yeah, second pack, kind of no man's land swim. So it was the best I think I could have done. I was really taken care of in Boulder by some Boulder Sports Chiropractic. They just took me in and started treating my shoulder. I don't think I would have recovered in half the time if they hadn't been so generous. So yeah, thankful to them.
Awesome. That's really cool when people help you out like that. Now, yeah. And what was going through your head during that time when, because again, I think another thing that age groupers go through is rarely do age groupers swim all the way through the winter. They take a break either through choice or for the fact it's, you know, too damn cold to get to the pool or inconvenient and the car's frozen. And I think everybody goes through, especially this sort of time of year, so late January, early February, we're getting back into the water after having had a break. And mentally, it's horrible because you're looking at your watch and the times are much slower than you remember. And of course, you've been through all of this on the backside of an injury. So talk us through the sort of mental mindset you had getting back into swimming to try and stay positive.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a positive person generally. So I was like, okay, maybe I can just hang on to the back of the front pack. If I 2 weeks of swimming, you know, I am a swimmer by background, maybe I'll be able to do it. But I was staying really fit on the bike and run. That's one thing that was kind of going well. So I kind of ran with my arm taped to my side for a while, and then finally I was able to move it. But I knew if I stayed focused for like that little bit of time while it was healing, it would just pay off like a ton in the back half of the season. Even if it didn't pay off at 70.3 Worlds, I knew I would be super happy to continue to race well in October and November. So I tried to keep that in mind, and there were some low points where I'm like, oh, I can't believe all I can do is backstroke right now. Like, this sucks.
Yeah.
I tried to stay positive. And I was even positive on the start pontoon in Chattanooga, but the reality set in quite quickly.
And you had what? Was it maybe 4 weeks after Chattanooga until Ironman Taiwan?
Yeah, it was 3 weeks.
3 weeks, okay.
Yeah. So basically, since I did have that, finally swimming pain free, like matches threw me in the water. I was like full on swim training until I left for Taiwan, which was about 2 weeks later. And I was the same sort of trepidation that I had in the swim in Chattanooga. I was like, okay, some of these guys are pretty fast here in Taiwan. We had Balazs Soke from Hungary, and then Jaroslav Kovacic, and I'm probably butchering their names right now. He's from the Czech Republic, and he's a world-class swimmer. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to have to like see how it goes, and maybe my swim fitness is back, but maybe it's not. So just have to play it by ear. And then I was surprised to actually, I let out the swim in Taiwan. I was super surprised by that. So at that point, I knew my swim was back. And I think I just needed like that three more weeks of training, and I would have been fine at Chattanooga. But can't change the race date just for one guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it puts you in a great position in Taiwan, doesn't it? Because you're there really with the pressure off, you're starting in the water, not really knowing where you're going to be, and to lead out the swim amongst people who are really world-class swimmers has got to give you a very positive frame of mind to get onto the bike. So talk us through a little bit through what happens as you jump on the bike then, Kevin.
Yeah, so I had one of my little, like, I guess the other guys were kind of taking their time in transition. I did an ITU transition, so I was out super fast. I was, and also, like you said, I was in a great mindset. I was like, I can't believe I let the swim out. So you had to put your bike in transition the night before in Taiwan, like most races. But it was 100% humidity. I mean, as close as you can get to 100% without it just being raining. And overnight, my power meter had died. So I get out on the bike and I'm just kind of riding with no data and a ton of positive mental energy. And next thing I know, I turn around and there's just nobody's even within sight. And I'm like, all right, I guess I'm about to spend the next like 7 hours by myself. But really, I was thinking of Marino van Honecker. He was racing, and we were lucky enough to get about a 3 minute gap on him in the swim. So my whole mindset was like, okay, try and hold off Marino for as long as you possibly can. And I ended up riding the first 90K in 2:10. So that was the first kind of data point that I got, was like, okay, 90K is just up.
I've just realized, I read this on your blog and it's only just like clicked in my head. I read it thinking, oh, that's a fairly tasty 70.3 split. This is the first half of an Ironman. And how hot was it that day as well as being 100% humidity?
Yeah, so like it was dark out as we're setting up our transition, and it was already 91 degrees Fahrenheit.
Before
the sun even came up. So by the time it was like maybe 11 in the morning, it was, the real feel was over 100. I think the max temperature on the day was 107.
Oh,
it's,
man,
probably tied for the hottest Ironman in the world, like tied with Malaysia. And that's the reason why I went there. So I got myself into it. But yeah, so I rode through 90Ks in 2:10. And I noticed I put 8 minutes into Marino, and I was like, okay, this is insane,
right?
This is not sustainable at all.
And do you know what, man, for our British listeners, I've just quickly Googled this in the background. 107 degrees Fahrenheit is just a shade under 42 degrees Celsius. That's absolutely mental.
Yeah, it was like, in retrospect, I'm glad I did it, because I was like, okay, I can handle pretty much any amount of heat.
Any kind of heat, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's unreal. So, okay, so halfway through, 2:10 on the clock, the halfway point of the bike split. And I presume you've got no power data, so I assume at this point you think to yourself, maybe I've gone a little bit hard, but I don't know, what were you thinking, what went through your head at this point?
All I have is kind of rate of perceived exertion and time and distance. And I was like, I feel fine. I'm still thinking correctly. I haven't lost my mind. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to ride. Basically, I said, I'm going to ride as easy as possible, because I think I can outrun everybody here. The biggest worry for me was, I don't want Marino to put 20 minutes into me on the bike, and because that's how he wins races.
Yeah.
And so I thought, you know, I can ride this last 90K as easy as possible. I actually came to a complete stop at one of the aid stations just to like grab a bunch of bottles and fill up the Ventum water bottle there with the full 1 liter of liquids. Like,
oh, so it's got like the built-in bladder thing, yeah?
Yeah, the built-in bottle. So, I mean, I was kind of taking my good sweet time. I rode 16 minutes slower on the second half of the bike. And yeah, I do think if I had continued my my rate of exertion from the first lap, I probably would have ended up in the hospital. A couple of the guys farther back in the race saw me so far ahead. It was actually Simon Cochran from New Zealand, and he gave me the nickname Kamikaze Collington because he's like, Kevin's going to die today. He's there goes Kamikaze Collington.
You have got to have that on your kit. You've got to have that printed on the backside of your kit, man.
Yeah.
Wow. So 107 degrees in the sun and off onto the run. And at this point, what was your lead? What was your lead as you came off the bike then?
Jaroslav, the Czech athlete, had actually made up quite a bit of time on me, and I only had about 2 minutes on him. So we ran out, like I came out and I could see him behind me. He was about obviously 800 meters down. And I think he just ran to the hotel. He was over it. He didn't want anything else to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. With Ironman Taiwan. But I was like, I came here, obviously I'm still feeling good. I came here to win this, and I wanted to see how I go over 42 kilometers in the heat. So I just kept going, and I walked every single aid station because 107, it's just so 42 degrees Celsius. It's so crazy.
Yeah.
So I would pretty much ask for full bottles of cold water, and I would just dump them over my head. It was all about survival. And Marino actually made up some time on me, and I was getting worried, but I think he ended up having to walk every aid station as well. It was just the survival fest out there. At one point I had 12 minutes on him, and I think we all just kind of gave up and tried to survive to the finish line. And yeah, the last 2 kilometers I perked back up. I was like, oh, I'm about to win an Ironman. This is pretty awesome. So it was a good feeling.
You used Marino's mindset trick on him and had 12 minutes on him. And I tell you what, mate, you want to be glad you didn't end up in a run battle with somebody for the win on a day like that. Yeah. It could have been a serious hospital trip at the end, couldn't it?
Yeah, that would have been more uncomfortable than any race I had done. So I was happy to have a big buffer on Marino because he was actually looking pretty good. He doesn't have a heat or a history of racing well in the heat, but he looked solid. And I was like, oh, thank God I'm a mile and a half ahead of him.
Yeah, man. Oh, well, that's going to give you enormous confidence going into Kona next year, racing so well in the heat and knowing that you can handle it and knowing you can bike fast, because I know that Ventum's a fast bike, but we can't give it all the credit, can we? We've got to give the engine some of the credit for riding at that speed.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I went with Matt Dixon 3 years ago as a coach. We just had to work on my cycling, and it's really come a long way. Yeah, I rode 434 with a very positive split bike. So I feel like I have all the tools to do well in Kona now, especially the physiological heat perspective. And really, it's just I have another 10 months to get ready. And that I'm pretty confident about it. I mean, I know it's not like, yeah, it's hot in Kona and the course is hard, but it's really the competition that'll get you. And if you make a bad decision, if you're like, I'm going to ride with Cameron Wirth today, like that's clearly a bad decision for a guy like me. And so it'll be all about keeping my head on my shoulders and getting my nutrition in and really just being fit and ready to race on race day.
Well, you know, a lot of the guys that we've talked to about the pro race at Kona have often sort of said, being in that train is really difficult because it kind of concertinas up and everyone has to sit up to not roll into the draft, and then someone will put the gas down and all of a sudden, I remember Joe Skipper saying, you know, we were going from riding 160 watts to riding 360 watts or 460 watts, just trying to, you know, keep the space in between. So what, without giving too much away, what do you think your tactic would be? Obviously you're confident of being a front pack swimmer, and there's always going to be somebody who goes not so off the front of the swim, but you're going to be coming out right with the good swimmers in the front pack at Kona. How do you see the bike playing out for you, all things going well?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just have to look to previous years where an athlete like myself has done well, and I do have a lot of experience in those front packs where you have to hold the 12 meters. So I think that'll pay off a little bit. Like, I'll be ready for the differential in power. Yeah. And that'll definitely be part of my training leading into it is just having those big spikes of power. And I also think at some point I might just end up by myself on the bike, like for the last 30, 40K of the ride. And you have to be able to sort of hold yourself together and ride yourself into the run and make sure you keep getting your nutrition down. So, I mean, that's one thing Matt is really good at, Matt Dixon. He's great at race planning. So I think leading into the race, he'll have all sorts of sort of tidbits for me, and we'll have a pretty pretty good plan leading into the race, and I'll be confident in that.
Well, here's a bit of a curveball question for you. We've just seen news announced today that Javier Gomez has announced he wants to go and race Kona this year. So how are you feeling about facing down Javier Gomez again?
Yeah, I mean, that'll be interesting. So Javier's like similar. He's obviously way better than me historically, but he's similar. He's like a great swimmer. Not to say I'm a great swimmer, but I'll be in the same sort of swim vicinity as him.
Yeah.
And then he typically kind of like, if he has a weakness, it's on the bike. And then it just kind of depends on how he runs a marathon, because like we've seen some of the most dominant athletes in the world come out, and you know, sometimes Jan has obviously won it twice, Jan Frodeno, but then he also walked the entire marathon this past year. And Lionel Sanders, who's arguably one of the fastest runners, he didn't have like an amazing run time. He kind of looked like he was injured by the end of the run last year. So Kona has a way of like exposing people. So I feel like if there is a year someone's going to beat Javier Gomez, it's going to be this year.
Interesting. Before he figures it out properly.
Yeah, because I feel like once he figures it out, he's such a diesel engine that he will win it someday. And maybe he'll win it this year. But, you know, if there's going to be a year he doesn't win it, like, what was it, Zelim Zay, he actually got third at 70.3 Worlds, which really surprised me. But I don't know if he was ready for the difficulty of the bike there. Yeah. And he ended up getting beaten by Jan and Sebastian. So that was a surprising result. He's definitely beatable, I guess is what I'm saying. Maybe not by me.
But maybe by you. Who knows, man? Never put a limiter on it. And I think the big challenge, the thing that makes Kona such a fascinating watch every year, is you guys were all racing each other, but you've also got this second opponent, which is trying to figure out the heat and humidity and the wind and conditions of the island itself.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's so many factors that go into a good race in Kona. Like, you know, you see someone look great at mile one who ends up just throwing up in the energy lab. I think the best story I've heard was like Marino van Honecker. He was winning the race one year and then he just dropped out. Like, it's just such a hard day. And yeah, it's not the hottest race in the world. Like, but it's hot enough and the competition is incredible. So it just all adds up to, you know, the hardest day in triathlon.
Well, this would be my last question for you today, I think. But
yeah,
it was interesting to me looking at the comparable temperature data from Taiwan and Kona, in that it ended up being, I don't know, 15, 20 degrees hotter in Taiwan than it is in Kona. And everyone who goes to Kona is threatened by the heat mentally. Everyone's afraid of it, except I think possibly you, knowing that you've raced well in these conditions must give you tremendous confidence going to Kona and facing conditions that are, I mean, they're going to be hot, but you might be the only guy there thinking, well, this isn't as hot as the last Ironman I did.
Yeah, that's true. So, I mean, the thing about Taiwan is that I definitely made some mistakes on the run that if someone had been there to challenge me, I would have probably ended up not winning. So I think that I just made some nutritional mistakes. I remember at one point I was like, am I even going to finish the race today? And I had to come back from that. And fortunately, I had such a big gap that I was able to sort of pull myself together and still do well. So what I kind of hope from Kona is that like the 15 to 20 degrees of less heat will maybe offer me a little bit of a leeway. So maybe the nutritional mistakes, if there are any, won't have as big of an effect. And then also, like, obviously the experience is in the bag from Taiwan. So I think it's a good, it was a good thing to do. I don't know if I'll ever want to race an Ironman in that sort of heat again, but it was a good experience in retrospect.
yeah, absolutely. And finally then, what have you got planned in terms of races for the season leading up to Kona next year? Because you've already got your points in the bag now, right?
Pretty much, I think. So I have 3,290 points, which is just the definition of bubble. I think if I stay there, I might get the last spot for Kona, like 50th spot. So I'm going to race Ironman Texas, and I feel like that's the last piece of the puzzle. It's a very competitive race. It's not as hot, clearly, as Taiwan. In fact, sometimes in April, it's downright temperate. But it'll definitely be a championship field. And so if I do well, it'll be sort of like, okay, I've done well in extreme heat. I've done well in a championship field. And I mean, that's all I can really do. I just have to go give Kona a second try, you know, like, and hopefully it goes better this time and I'll have all the experience and maybe be a little bit better at the sport so I can really knock it out of the park, but we'll just have to see.
Hey, well, man, our fingers going to be crossed for you. It's been great interviewing you and hearing your story, man. I'm glad you bounced back from your injury mid-season and congratulations again on the Taiwan result. We look forward to seeing what you can turn out next season, and we will be watching with bated breath when Kona comes around, my friend.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, Rob. It's always a pleasure.
It's been great talking to you, mate. You take care of yourself and we'll speak to you again soon, hopefully when you're on the podium at Kona next year, hey?
Yeah, I hope so. Looking forward to it.
Thanks, man.
Okay, bye.
Be really interesting to see how he goes this year at Kona.
Oh, yeah.
It's such a big part of it, being able to race well in the heat.
Yep, definitely. Definitely, definitely. And oh, Robbie's such a nice guy.
Isn't he just? Yeah. Yep. Real quality bloke. And wish you all the best, Kevin. Thanks very much for coming on the show. And I'm looking forward to seeing how his races go this year.
Yeah. It'll be cool. Be cool to watch out.
Right. New sections then. In our new section today, we have a couple of interesting bits and bobs we found, starting with a change. It's going to make a lot of people happy, this. A change to the run course at Roth.
Yes. Now, I was reading about this, Rob, because we heard a few people who gave us a little bit of a race report, didn't they, last year from Roth, some of the listeners. And I remember them saying they weren't totally convinced by that run course that they had changed to last year. So this new a sort of change is going to have bits of the old course still, isn't it? They're going to bring back some of the bits that they took away and they're going to keep in some of the bits that they changed. Does that make sense?
It's great news for the racers, because last year people hadn't really taken in the fact that Roth has got this reputation for being lightning fast, largely down to partly the run was always completely flat. Largely, it was on like hard packed trails on canals, which somehow seemed to not bash people's legs quite as much as running on tarmac. Last year's run course, I don't think there was a meter of flat on it. It was just rolling up and down the whole way through. And even Joe Skipper was saying, you know, there's no way people are going to go fast on this new course because it's just beyond brutal. So it sounds like they've changed it back and put a huge chunk of that old canal back into it. They've left in part of that last year's run course where you go through part of the villages where there's loads of support, but there's hardly any, well, they've halved the height gain from last year. So it's somewhere in between, which I think, you know, the balance of crowd support and better surface to run on and flatter is going to make a lot of people very happy.
Totally. So, oh, Rob, I every time that I see pictures of Roth and things like that, I always think, oh, yeah, maybe one year would be cool.
Just to
experience
it's
it.
One for
and
the bucket list, that, isn't it?
Yeah, the people that do go and do it, you only ever hear good things apart from some of the run course last year.
No one ever comes back and goes, I was completely underwhelmed by Roth.
No.
It's like the Glastonbury, I think, isn't it? The Glastonbury of triathlon.
Yeah, totally.
All right, and one last piece of news here, and this is really good news, actually. We've got another athlete in the Tri-24/7 Winter Train With series on Zwift. You can train with none other than Tim Don on Wednesday, the 31st of January. So only probably a day away by the time you're listening to this, if you listen on the day it's released. Great to see him back riding again.
Yeah. Oh, well, Robbie's had such a torrid time, hasn't he, since being ruled out of Kona because clearly he had that awful accident. So it's great that he continues to be on the comeback.
Yeah.
And Rob as well, Endura, one of his sponsors, are they've sort of designed a special kit, effectively, which it looks really, really cool, actually. So the profits from sales will go towards the ongoing medical expenses that he's incurred since that accident.
Yeah, great stuff. And it wasn't more than a couple of weeks ago we were talking about watching him have that halo removed from his head. So recovering from broken vertebrae, what a legend. It's great to see him back training again, back doing what he loves, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's just had such an incredible career, Rob.
Yeah, he really has.
Hasn't he?
He really has. Yeah. Three-time former Olympian. And was he world champion at, he's been triathlon, duathlon and aquathlon.
Yeah. Hy-Vee winner in the past. All, I mean, he's done it all, hasn't he?
Britain's fastest Ironman as well.
Yeah.
Or the world's fastest Ironman for a while.
Well, correct. Yeah. So, awesome.
Cool stuff. Right. Well, I think we better wrap this up for another week here, Hells. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Just a couple of reminders before you go. If you check out our sponsors over at precisionhydration.com, send your nominees in for the Tribe Triathlete of the Month for February to helen@oxygenaddict.com. And remember, you can get yourself 15% off Precision Hydration with the code OxygenAddict15. And if you use the code OxygenAddict1 at wearetribe.co, you can get yourself a free sample pack of 6 energy bars, trail mix and recovery bars. So, yeah, jolly good. Sorry, yeah, it's free, but you pay a pound for the postage, don't you? We should make that clear, yeah. Sorry, my mistake.
That's right.
And Fueled by Cake update, please. How are we doing? More books going out?
More books going out. So, fueledbycake.com to order your copy. Still ticking along, Rob, ticking along. And I'm going to be selling it at a local race next month. In 2 months' time. And yeah, it people still sending me lots of lovely photos of their bakes, which I love because clearly lots of people are enjoying it.
It's a great little community, isn't it? I love that. Yep. I love the tweeting the cakes photo stuff. That's brilliant. If you've made a cake, get it on Twitter. Show us your cakes.
Show us your cakes. Yeah, get on it.
I didn't mean that quite the way it came out. Oh, God, I'm going to hell.
No, it's fine. You're all right. Don't worry.
Power on through. And on that rather dubious note, I think we'll have to wrap up today's show. So listen, thanks very much for listening. You've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. I'm Coach Rob Wilby.
I'm Helen Murray.
And until next week, have a great, safe training, racing and cake baking week. And we'll speak to you again soon. Cheers, everyone. See ya. Thank you.